Welcome to Packer Pushers, the data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk nerdy about networking. Now, this is a Priority Queue podcast, and just recently, a company by the name of Cloudflare have been announced their SSL product, a new product called Keyless SSL. And it's really interesting to me. Basically, what they're saying is that they can securely and meeting all of the appropriate guidelines, take your SSL website into and provide you with a CDN for SSL. Now, if you're any sort of a company that's doing high scale SSL traffic, you'll know just how hard it is to build a data center front end that allows you to be secure against DDoS attacks and things like that. So if you're into that topic, if you're building a data center and SSL encryption and you've got hardware appliances doing SSL decryption and 10 gig pipes and all that sort of stuff, this is the show that you want to listen to hear different ideas about that, how that works. But before I do, first of all, I'd like to introduce two people from Cloudflare who come on to the Priority Queue show today to talk about it. So first of all, I'll invite Ryan to say hello and tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name's Ryan Lackey. I've been with Cloudflare for this year. I've previously done startups, and I work on security products, web application firewall, keyless SSL, various other things. It's very, very exciting getting to speak with your audience.
Thanks. And also with us is Nick Sullivan. Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, yeah, I'm Nick. I have been working here at Cloudflare for a little while. I previously worked at Apple on their encryption technologies, and I'm very happy to explain some details about keyless SSL to you.
Cool. So let's kick it off. First of all, why reinvent SSL? I say reinvent because you kind of have. I mean, what was the logic behind that very quickly?
Well, for a lot of our customers, SSL is kind of a difficult thing because when you have a high volume website that has a lot of people visiting, reliability and availability are very important. And to do that, a lot of times people use a CDN, as you mentioned, or a DDoS protection company, something to sit in front of the traffic to block malicious traffic and to make sure that your site stays up all the time. And this works great with HTTP and with sites in which there's no encryption, but what we found is that a lot of these sites want to have SSL served to their customers. So they want to make sure that all the traffic that their customers send to them is encrypted from the browser to the web server. And what we found is that in our previous offerings, the way to do this is that the customers would give us their private keys. And this doesn't necessarily fly for some larger customers who are more security conscious about where their keys have to live. So whether this is banking organizations that have restrictions as to where the private keys can live, or this is national governments where there's legislation around who can control the SSL termination. We found that there was a big opportunity for us, if we reinvented the way that SSL worked, to allow these customers to use a DDoS protection service such as Cloudflare.
Yeah, and so for those of you who are listening in, and if you're not thinking about how SSL works, your browser connects to a server and then makes a request to establish an encrypted connection. So I think the best way to start this off is to very quickly recap how a normal browser or a normal client connection to an SSL server works. Nick, why don't you quickly describe how SSL works, and then we can talk about how Cloudflare changes this in a way that works.
Sure, Greg. Yeah, so the way an SSL connection works is a person who's browsing the internet or a machine that's browsing the internet types in the web address and does an initial connection to the web server, and that web server will present to the web browser a certificate, and this certificate contains the public key of the website, the website's domain name, and it's signed by a public certification authority. So this is your Entrust, your VeriSign, and this is the identity of the website. This comes back to the client, and from there they negotiate what's called a session key. And this session key is used to encrypt all transactions going forward. The server gives the client this certificate to say, this is who I am, and then there's something called a handshake, which not only establishes the session key, but establishes proof that the server that the client is talking to actually owns the other side, the private key associated with that certificate. Once this handshake is done and the client is satisfied that not only the certificate is correct, but that the certificate is owned by the server, then both sides have a session key and can continue communicating in private.
Connection encrypted with public key, guy on the other end gets that, decodes it and says, yes, that's a connection, sends a key back to the other side encrypted with the private key. They can both now decode these because of public-private key encryption, and now you've got a session key, which is then used to encrypt everything. Now, the key for SSL in this is that the real compute load, if you're an SSL person, is in the compute, is in the initial key exchange. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. The most complicated part of this is the public key operations. So it, in this case, it's on the client side verifying that the certificate is valid, and on the server side actually performing the private key operation, which is the proof that the server is the owner of the certificate.
And that's, there's two parts to the whole SSL thing that are very, very important. It's not just the encryption, it's the fact that the person you're trying to connect to is the person you're trying to get to. So you don't want people impersonating, you know, the bank of, you know, Udna Data or whatever it is, and then saying, yes, I'm actually them, and then dummying up the site and then stealing your data. That's the key.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want anybody to impersonate your site, and you don't want somebody who's sort of collected information to retroactively go back and decrypt it if they have the private key. So there's a twofold goal of SSL: establishment of a secret, a shared secret, and authentication of the server.
So now, if you're building a data center and you're hosting an SSL web server, that means you have to bring all the data in from the internet. Now, most of the internet actually has a content delivery network. And a content delivery network is what Cloudflare is all about, right? Right.
We're both a content delivery network and various other security features like distributed denial of service prevention and website optimization for performance, as well as other security features like a web application firewall. But yes, essentially we have to decrypt the traffic and operate on the plain text, which is sort of a conflict with the idea of keeping your private keys on premise if your private keys have to be located next to your server.
Yeah, and basically Cloudflare's business, now I use Cloudflare on my blog for very good reasons, and basically Cloudflare means they've got POPs all over the world. And when there's an image on my blog, if you come to etherealmind.com or packetpushers.net, you hit that page, and what you'll see is that the content will probably be coming from the Cloudflare cache that's closest to you. So if you're in the UK, you'll probably get served from the Cloudflare POP in London. Instead of going and fetching the content from all the way in America, you'll get to load it locally. With SSL, you can't do that. You can't cache it because all of the objects are encrypted, so there's nothing to cache.
Right. It's specifically that the connections are encrypted, so yeah, there's nothing to cache as it passes through the server.
That's right. But you want that, because even if you're a bank site, there's still, you know, even on the page that's got your personal details, probably about half of it or three quarters of it is still cacheable. It's still, you know, static objects that never change.
Correct.
Right. So if you're running an SSL site, just from a performance point of view, you still want to be able to use a content delivery network, but you don't want to have to give Cloudflare your private keys because you're running in a restricted business, or it's just not good practice to give your cloud. You know, you then have to, I don't know if you've ever done key exchange with people, but it does involve getting on planes and doing magic hand wavy stuff to, you know, make sure that the keys have an end-to-end chain of security and all sorts of things. True.
Yeah, we definitely put a lot of effort into securing keys across all of our infrastructure. But for certain customers that are in highly regulated industries or that have an existing on-premise security infrastructure for their keys, the thought of giving up their keys is too much for them to do. Ironically, it's actually a lot of we do have a lot of customers who are very, very happy for us to take their keys from them and to manage the keys as much as possible, just because smaller businesses or less technical businesses, or even some large technical businesses, really don't have a good key management infrastructure. I'd say key management and vulnerabilities in key management are a set of errors that large enterprises often have for security. So it's an area that you must invest in if you're going to manage keys yourself.
Yeah, key management is not an insignificant task. It's a complicated, you know, tricky sort of a business. If you're going to do it internally, it does take a lot of effort. I've done several of them over the years and regretted it. I know that.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as easy as people make it out to be. So, but hey, that's all right. if you're a financial institution and you're looking to do content delivery, like if you're a big bank, what are the issues that give you problems, what keep you awake at night, if you like?
So one of the issues specifically, at least for U.S. regulated banks, is that loss of a private key is a reportable event to the banking regulators, which is something that goes beyond the technical administration of the company. It goes up to the CIO or CEO even, and they really hate having to make these reports to the banking regulators in the world that we live in. So it is something that the whole technology organization within banks tries to minimize the risk of a reporting event like that. And it's a very uncomfortable feeling for a technology executive in a bank to have something that serious as a risk completely out of your hands and trusting it to a third party. You can do a lot of audit and a lot of contractual conditions around making sure your counterparty does keep things secure. But at the end of the day, if it's out of your physical control, it's very hard to feel confident 100%.
And the flip side of this is too, is if you're building a data center of any great scale, you've got a number of issues here, which is that once you get an SSL, if you try and do the SSL on site, you've then got to have 10 gig, 40 gig, 100 gig pipes to be able to secure yourself against data center, keep your data center secure.
Yeah, we're having I think it's the end of on-premise networking for DDoS filtering and mitigation on the internet. Yeah. There's no single location on the internet. Even any one of Cloudflare's data centers is not capable of resisting a large DDoS. They're in the 300 to 500 gigabits per second of bandwidth attack, and there's just no single place in the world where there's that much bandwidth coming together that you could get access to. Because even if you had 500 gigabits of connectivity to your upstream, there's no way your upstream has that much connectivity to anyone else, so it would just get bottlenecked there. So the only solution to the truly global scale, high-end DDoS is to have a distributed architecture, either using IP Anycast like Cloudflare does, or using maybe a client-side library that has a lot of separate IPs, which mobile apps can do, or some other solution like that. But there's no way to have a single location with enough bandwidth to mitigate the biggest DDoSes. And it's also pretty silly. If you've got a transaction processing website that maybe has 1 megabit per second of legitimate traffic on it, provisioning 500 gigabits per second of pipes into it just for DDoS mitigation is completely uneconomic.
Yeah, so now we've got three issues in play here. We've got the DDoS issue, which is that, you know, if I'm building an enterprise data center and I need to put SSL and I want to have it completely secure, I now need to have typically at least 40, maybe 100 gigs of bandwidth, probably more, to be able to withstand, you know, have some level of certainty that you can withstand a DDoS attack. Now, you might go upstream to one of the other people that do it, Prolexic or whatever, but they just wash it. You can still have an attack inside the encrypted stream that can still take you down, correct?
Yeah, we've been noticing that more and more. There are definitely attacks that are happening higher up the stack. It used to be you'd get attacks that were ICMP floods or whatever, and they moved up to at least be UDP, TCP attacks. And now we see layer 7 attacks are the most sophisticated attacks. And above that, we're actually seeing SSL-specific attacks. I can't really go into the details of exactly which incident caused it, but we're seeing attacks that are targeted against sites that are running SSL by picking cipher suites that are specifically computationally intensive, doing key setup, all sorts of stuff like that are very, very difficult to mitigate without spending a lot of money on infrastructure.
So let me try and have a go at this. Let's say somebody just picks an image on your page that's an SSL, and then they write a script to just fetch that image over and over and over. You're going to have to burn SSL cycles just making that SSL connection.
Well, the issue is that SSL is TCP, so you won't be able to spoof the origin IP. But if you had a distributed network of machines that could do new connection setups from a novel IP or some other way to prevent caching in your attack script, then you can definitely cause a new SSL negotiation on every single one of those requests, which is a huge potential DDoS vector.
Yeah, and there's any number of ways this could happen. I don't want to get into the security details of SSL in this session, but I guess if you're not thinking about how SSL works, once you've got an SSL website, you're vulnerable, not just from a bandwidth flood, but also from an application attack which burns CPU on your SSL gateway, whether it's a load balancer or the server farm itself, right?
Yeah, a resource consumption CPU attack on your SSL infrastructure is definitely a vulnerability.
All right. So from my point of view, I'm normally designing enterprise data centers with 40 to 100 gigs of bandwidth just in case somebody tries to do an SSL DDoS or, you know, which is just flood me with SSL traffic, which I can't defend against and you can't cache. You'd have to go to a mitigation engine like Prolexic or one of those companies. Cloudflare has the same thing, but you use your content delivery network to offer something similar. You can protect customers off of DDoS attacks.
Right. We're a giant reverse proxy for traffic. So we take the SSL session from the browser to Cloudflare. It terminates there, and then we open a new session from Cloudflare onto the origin server. So in between, we can do all of our CDN, caching, web content optimization, web application firewall, everything else on the HTTP directly, rather than having an end-to-end session.
Right. So that sets the scene, except that for some customers, you don't want to give away your private key so that you can then crack the flow, cache it, and then encrypt it back to the server, which is what you've been doing for the last few years, I guess.
Yeah, that works fine for the majority of customers, but there are definitely highly regulated entities and others who don't want to give up their public key and their private key. They're sort of forced to decide between all the DDoS CDN mitigation advantages that we have or keeping control of the keys. And that was a pretty difficult choice for a lot of them.
Well, I've worked for financial institutions and, you know, if they lose their private key or somebody gets a hold of it, that's actually reportable to, like, in America, it's reportable to the FBI, and over here it's, you know, the Secret Service type thing, MI5 and stuff over here, because if the banks lose their private key, people can compromise every single transaction associated with those institutions. It's a major event.
Yeah, it definitely.
Yeah, and they're just not allowed to give them away. I think last time I worked with one of these, it took 5 people to be in a room at the same time to regenerate the keys.
With the HSMs and the key ceremonies and everything else. And it definitely involves a lot of plane travel and a lot of organizational design. Yeah. It's in a larger bank, you can definitely have a risk management system where you have technical executives and business and risk and audit people that are all working together. Mm-hmm. This is a really big problem that goes beyond purely technical issues to solve.
Yeah, that's right. Key management is a huge issue. It's full of arcane. When I say protocols, I don't mean networking protocols. I mean actual human face-to-face and people with special things going up to machines and doing stuff to do keys. So what Cloudflare did was they did something unique with this, and I'm really looking forward to hearing you try and explain this in an audio podcast. So tell me what you've done with Keyless SSL.
Sure. So what we did was we found a way to allow customers to keep their private keys on their own infrastructure in their own sort of secure facilities while using Cloudflare as the front end to defend their sites against DDoS. And the way we did this was by actually deconstructing the SSL handshake. So earlier in the podcast, we talked a bit about how there's certain things that happen in the handshake, and one of the things that happens is that the private key is used to authenticate the server to the client. And this is actually just one step in a large handshake. And what we did was we extended the SSL handshake so that this private key operation can happen in the infrastructure of the customer. And the way we did this was by establishing a secure tunnel from each and every single one of Cloudflare's secure data centers to a key server that is located in our customers' infrastructures. And this secure tunnel is what we use to send the message that has the private key operation happen. So the full handshake happens all the way through, and the private key operation happens at the client's key server in whatever the bank's secure domain is, and the session keys stay between Cloudflare servers so they can communicate with the browser. The browser and Cloudflare, all communication between those two points are encrypted with session keys, but Cloudflare does not have the ability to use the private key of or have access to or see the private key of the customer.
So this is a modification to SSL, a minor or a major modification?
Well, in terms of having SSL broken up in geographically, it's a major change. In terms of how the protocol is set up, I mean, any tiny change to SSL, it gives a version bump of some sort. So recently, TLS got changed from 1.1 to 1.2. People are talking about TLS 2.0. Any kind of minor change in the protocol in terms of different ordering of steps is considered a major change. So I would say that Cloudflare's keyless SSL is uses TLS and SSL in the standard way that it's supposed to happen, but it's a big change in that it is actually geographically distributed, and this is a large change.
Right.
I would also say that it's a big enough change that we felt obligated to go to ISEC partners to have a security audit done on the protocol change itself, and they came back and said that it was no additional risk to the protocol versus keeping the keys on-premise in normal operation mode. So it was definitely something we thought seriously about, and we're really surprised that was possible when we started looking at it.
Yeah, because you sort of imagine, like, when I first read this article, I was sort of sitting there going, SSL is meant to be completely secure. You aren't meant to just be able to change the protocol around, and compatibility just didn't sort of seem to be built into the protocol. It's meant to be secure, compatible, secure, version numbers. That just doesn't sort of happen, right?
Yeah, it's not so much that we changed the protocol ordering of steps or anything. It's just we changed where one part of the protocol happens. So it's in some ways, it's a very major change, and it allows a lot of new things to happen.
Right.
And in other ways, it's actually a fairly simple change where we just take one element of the computation and move it across organizational boundaries between us and our customer. So it's that there's never really the separation between where your SSL is terminated and who is the ultimately responsible party wasn't a distinction before when you operated your own web server. It's only after you start using CDNs and outsourced DDoS mitigation services this becomes an issue.
Yeah, and this is important because we need to be able to do this. Like, I mean, key ceremonies, handing over the keys to you is just, there's an enormous cost associated with that if I'm in any sort of a high security posture. But I also, you know, you guys have got so much bandwidth coming into your, you know, distributed bandwidth, just, you know, like right at the edge, China and, you know, all over Asia and America and so forth. I kind of want to be able to use your service for this. So now let me just try and recap this. Client connects to the web server. The web server performs the initial part of the key exchange fundamentally. And then what it does is before it responds back to the client, it sends off to the private key server or into my infrastructure where my private key is and gets a session key, right? And then sends that back. And that's fundamentally the change. Is the one everything in SSL is still between you, between my the browser client and the Cloudflare servers?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. The only small thing I would suggest there is that the key server itself does not have the session keys. It has something called a precursor to the session keys. So the key server itself is just doing private key operations. But yeah, Cloudflare has the session key and after the end of this handshake.
So that's the key. The thing is that you're getting the session key, which says, I'm now in the flow. I'm valid. I've been validated by the private key from the owner. I'm good to go. Now, I think the key to understanding how this is still secure is to understand that you're still decrypting the data in your infrastructure, correct?
That's correct. We are.
So that you can cache it in your Cloudflare servers?
Caching, filter, all sorts of other customer beneficial optimizations.
Right. So let's just say, so point number one, your servers are unencrypting the data. Let's make a note to come back and talk about how you mitigate your servers as being secure, right? Now, the second part about this transaction is the connection from you to the customer to get the private key. That's a new protocol, which you say has been validated, correct?
Yes, it has. We've had ISEC partners audit that protocol itself.
Yeah, a couple, not just one, if I remember rightly.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So now the connection from your infrastructure to the servers is using a new protocol, which has been validated by a couple of people. No doubt there'll be more to be done on that. People will want to have lots of time with that. Now, and then my private key is my problem, okay? But the connection to get to my private key, because that's a risk. If you can access my private key, do you restrict the source? Like, do I have to go to my firewalls and add Cloudflare's network to my IP addresses to reach this?
Yes, that's actually only connecting from Cloudflare's infrastructure, and we work with our customers to set up the appropriate access control, both at the network level and then at the application level. It's actually a mutually authenticated TLS session between Cloudflare's infrastructure and the key server. We don't want it exposed on the public internet because we don't want to be vulnerable to unknown attacks, but it's a mutually authenticated TLS, so it's relatively secure on its own.
Yeah, so the connection between Cloudflare and the My Private Key function is encrypted in it is a new protocol which has been validated, and B is encrypted in its own right, naturally enough, using, as you say, mutually authenticated TLS. Okay, so now what is it that Cloudflare does? I think I get the idea that my private key remains secure because it's not exposed on the internet. You've made some changes to the software that does the private key delivery. Is it still Nginx or something like that?
Yes, it's Nginx.
But it's got some extra software in there. Is that software being validated?
Yeah, during the ISEC partners audit, they took a look at that software and confirmed that it is just as safe as regular TLS.
And okay. We also have a lot of other additional audits performed on our infrastructure. We're PCI, working on our PCI 3.0 right now, and it's part of our general infrastructure that we use for our own applications that gets audited by third parties as well as internal.
Cool. So that's part of your existing infrastructure. So now my super secret data is being decrypted in your servers. How do you keep those servers secure? How do you mitigate the risk of that?
Our servers are dedicated to the task of serving, so they're single-purpose machines. They run very limited, very locked down sets of software. They're managed by a real-time 24/7 ops team that can alert if anything has changed on the machines. But yes, they do process plain text of customer traffic, so we view them as definitely some of our most secure machines. And by restricting what actually can execute on those machines using a variety of technologies, we try to secure them to the greatest degree possible. The bar that we're trying to make sure is that they're never the weakest link in the session, that the customer servers are protected by very strong security.
I believe you actually almost custom make the physical servers themselves too. So did I read a blog post on that a while back?
Yeah, they're custom machines for a variety of reasons, actually primarily performance, but we've put TPMs in all the machines. We have a lot of performance and security features. We have network performance. Most of what we're trying to do with these machines is defend against very large DDoS attacks, yeah, as well as cache a lot of content. So we have very high-speed NICs from SolarFlare, and we can do things like run Berkeley packet filter on the network cards themselves rather than in the CPU. So we have multiple processor execution domains on the machine. Mm. We have the network card. We have upstream routers that can do some filtering. So there's defense in depth across all of our infrastructure.
Okay. So, and then I guess the last thing is, are your servers physically secure?
Yeah, Cloudflare actually, as far as I know, owns zero real estate. All of our machines are in cages with full biometric access control, 24/7 monitoring, guards, everything else in tier one data centers around the world. They're in usually Equinix in the United States, and they're in other equivalently secure facilities around the world. They're in dedicated cages with access control. The other exciting thing about our machines is they actually don't have any sensitive data stored on disk. They're all in memory or on centralized repositories. Mm-hmm. So even if somebody were to break into one of these cages somehow, either through force or fraud or potentially a court order, the machines themselves don't contain anything really terribly exciting when they're powered off. So that's an additional level of security.
So the set that I assume from that, or would read into that, that the session key that we talked about for the SSL transaction only exists in memory. And if the server's powered out for any reason, that can't be hijacked. It's lost.
Yeah, correct. All the session keys and other keying data are only stored in memory. And we have a variety of access control measures on the systems themselves to protect the memory. The only data that ever touches disk is public HTTP content, and that stuff's already going over the wire anyway, and it's part of your public website, so it's not really a concern when that's cached.
Meh, if it's not encrypted, it's not secret, right? Logically enough. Okay, so servers are secure, operating systems are hardened, and it's all you do. You don't lose focus. And I know that there are a number of other content delivery networks out there which are just hodgepodges of people's leftover capacity and stuff like that. They're just not going to be able to do this sort of stuff, I don't believe, or not give you the same security guarantees anyway. We were talking offline before we started that you're actually planning on using the keyless stuff internally. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. We have a lot of data centers around the world, and we trust different locations to different degrees. Right now, it's very expensive for us to deploy a data center because we do put it in these very high security facilities with lots of redundant hardware and everything else. And we're looking at ways to use keyless on our own infrastructure to put keys only on our most secure machines and then run a lot of machines in less secure environments, either less secure countries or less secure physical locations closer to users, so that those machines themselves never have any keys, not just in memory, but they don't have them at all, and they rely on keyless to negotiate session keys for those users. It's a pretty big improvement for us in terms of cost of operating, and we'll definitely be able to put more servers closer to users, which will be a performance as well as security from a DDoS mitigation advantage for everyone.
And what about HSMs? What about people? What sort of infrastructure do the customers need to build to be able to take advantage of this? Is it specialized? Is it unique?
So right now we have a keyless server implementation that runs as just a software server running on whatever kind of Linux OS you want. We package it RPM and Deb. We also actually have it working on Windows because, surprisingly to us, some of our banking customers really wanted this to run on Windows servers, so we ported it. As well, we have customers that have a big investment in either on-site hardware security modules or enterprise key and certificate management solutions like Venafi, where we can integrate with them. So either the keyless agent talks to the HSM and pulls the keys out, or potentially at some point in the future, we might even run the keyless agent inside something like the secure execution environment of an HSM, providing an additional level of security. So this is just the first release of keyless. We're going to continue advancing the platform and the standard for the next several years.
So there's a long-term future. This isn't just a one-off. There's a whole bunch of innovations you can come on around this?
Yeah, we're looking at using keyless in a variety of ways, making keyless itself better and then new ways to use keyless. Maybe for different kinds of keys beyond just website SSL keys for different protocols or all sorts of stuff. It's a pretty exciting thing to work on.
I mean, I've got various ideas around keyless as a sort of one of the big challenges with SSL has always been not just the private key management, but the whole PKI management. It's like certificate management in the browsers and stuff like that. Is this going to do something in that direction, or is this just completely unrelated? You're focusing just on this managing the private key stuff for the time being.
So we use keyless to refer to just our keyless server, which is sort of an enterprise or a security feature. But an exciting thing that happened last week was we launched Universal SSL, where we provide SSL for free to all of our customers. Any customer that wants SSL actually now has an SSL certificate provisioned by us using two existing certification authorities. So we've reduced the security challenges of deploying SSL on the very high end and the cost and administrative complexity challenges of deploying SSL for everyone. And it's pretty exciting to get to be part of both of those.
Well, I mean, I've always wanted to put SSL on my blog, but my hosting provider doesn't let me. They just,
We actually have a solution to the problem of users having no control over their hosting environment and no ability to put SSL on their hosting environment. We offer something called Flexible SSL, where the connection from the user to Cloudflare is fully protected by a high-strength SSL, but the connection from Cloudflare to the user's origin server doesn't necessarily have to use SSL. So in a case of a user accessing a content site from a cafe, the first hop is actually where they're most likely to be attacked, the Wi-Fi. We're not so worried about the Cloudflare to their hosting infrastructure. Plus, we're investigating other options to protect the Cloudflare to hosting infrastructure side. This way, if you want to get SSL turned on right now for a site that doesn't support SSL, you can just turn on SSL from your users to Cloudflare, use flexible SSL, and not have to worry about how the server is configured. The other reason why people have not used SSL was the cost of paying for certificates, renewing them. There's a lot of organizations where getting any sort of financial contract signed takes a long time to do, even if it's for something as simple as an SSL cert, and making it a recurring challenge for them every year. So being able to provide free client origin certs on their servers is another way we can offer SSL end-to-end without challenge for our users.
Yeah, I've actually done that, and there's good reasons to do that. As you say, it's not only from a user perspective, being encrypted at the last mile, but it's also Google gives SEO juice to people who have encrypted protocols. So they'll higher rank you in the searches. Google would like to see more encrypted traffic on the internet. Encrypting traffic on the internet has its own pain points, of course, for carriers and service providers, but who cares about them?
Yeah, our goal is to see 100% of internet traffic encrypted as soon as possible. It's a very ambitious goal, and it will take a while to achieve, but we'd like to see encryption be the default, and you need to figure out a reason why you don't use encryption on a certain session versus why you do need to use encryption.
So corporate customers who are going to use this SSL, the keyless SSL from you, they're going to have to pay you money?
Right now, keyless SSL is part of our enterprise service tier. The average price for enterprise service is about $5,000 and per month, and you need to contact our enterprise sales team for that. We don't have a self-service keyless SSL option. The universal SSL product is available for everyone from free all the way through enterprise.
Yeah, I've got that enabled on my block, so you can now connect Ethereum minded packet pushers using SSL if you wish. But I was just thinking, like, for that $5,000 for the keyless SSL, that includes DDoS and content delivery as well.
Right. If you're a site that uses a lot of content, static content serving, the savings on bandwidth might actually make it free, or you might actually save money overall by using Cloudflare versus and getting free keyless SSL versus your current solution, depending on how much you pay for bandwidth.
Well, I was more thinking in terms of if you're building one of these servers today, you've got an F5 or, you know, some form of load balancer doing SSL offload, and it's probably sized at multiple gigabits, and even though it only turns over at hundreds of megabits, like, it's very common for customers to have load balance, usually F5s, with SSL acceleration turned on. Well, if you're doing the keyless stuff, you actually don't need these products at all anymore, because the SSL decryption is done in the Cloudflare network. And I mean, that is a saving of $500,000 a year just in maintenance costs for some customers. Maybe it's only $150,000 if you've got, say, 10 gig license or a 5 gig license, but that's still, you know, the cost of Cloudflare could be covered by the cost of throwing out your load balancer.
It's entirely possible.
And also it means you don't have to keep upgrading your load balancer every other day to try and defend yourself against a DDoS attack. I know that I've always had to put a lot of these load balancers and firewalls, by the way. You don't have to have excess capacity. If you've got 100 gigs of internet connectivity, you need 100 gigs of load balancing capacity, theoretically, and 100 gigs of firewall capacity for it to pass through. If that traffic's being cached outside, you can make major, major savings. And this is the part that really excites me about this technology, is that in the past, I've had to spend, you know, millions and millions of dollars putting in this, you know, scaled up front ends that have got all of this heavy functionality in them, even though we only use a fraction of the actual bandwidth from day to day. It's just that if this was to ever happen, we have to have this in place. So for me, this is a really great way to still have all the functionality of a, you know, you still need load balancers for other things in your network. You just don't need them for this core application like you used to, and could really save serious money. And I'm talking multiple millions for good sized corporations. So I think this is a really exciting development. I'm really looking forward to tracking more on this in the future. So, guys, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. Nick, have you got a blog or a Twitter account you'd like to tell people so they can follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me on the Cloudflare blog. I blog there pretty much once a week, or on Twitter at my handle, which is at Gritty Grease.
Okay. Good handle. Great, great. Speaking of those blogs, I'll put some links into the show notes that accompanies this, where you have got a bunch of really, really good articles that talk about the whole key exchange process and how it works in a lot of detail. I had to read them several times before, honestly, I started to understand them very well. So make sure, if you want to hear more, go and to click into those. Ryan, where can people find you?
I also blog on the Cloudflare blog at blog.cloudflare.com, and I'm on Twitter as Octal, the base 8 number system.
Cool. Well, if people, thanks for listening to today's show, and that's it. If you wanted to hear more about Cloudflare, go and head over to the Cloudflare website and take a closer look at the details. And this has been the Priority Queue podcast, and thanks for listening.